Welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Nova Reed. Good to have you here with me again. How are you doing? I'm excited today. I have got an absolute corker, a scorcher of a corker, an episode with activist, birth worker, doula extraordinaire and educator Mars Lord. But before we get into the episode, I want to let you know about some mischief that is going on this month, starting the 27th of April, my Courageous Courage course. And this edition, I have two editions, one for allies and one for Black and Brown women and people of colour. And this edition is for Black and Brown women and people of colour. And we're learning how to ally for ourselves. We're learning how to navigate everyday racism, to have conversations with people that we love without it having an impact on our mental health. So we'll be digging into my background in mental health, exploring how to manage anxiety, how to build resilience, how to have confidence to speak up and to advocate for ourselves when so often we feel like shrinking or worried that we won't be believed, or fears that we might be over-exaggerating or feeling paranoid. I'm gonna take you through what I do, how I'm able to stand up, how I'm able to advocate and hold people accountable for their racism on a daily basis as a Black woman without driving myself to insanity. So that's starting the week commencing 27th of April. It's 5 days. You get bespoke interaction with me, live and recorded videos, and a chance for me to really hold your hand with supporting you on navigating this funny thing called life as a Black or Brown person. So hit the links. I'll leave those in the profile afterwards. Now onto the episode. I want to give a caveat. Mars is epic. Mars and I are absolutely speaking truth to power in this episode. I first met Mars at an event. It would have been January 2018, and she was on a panel and I was delivering a workshop, and I was enjoying listening to the panel that I believe she was hosting on my break. And Mars has this incredible quiet, or she might argue with the quiet part, this grace that is so powerful. And in many ways, her essence reminds me of the late Toni Morrison from some of the videos I've seen of her online holding people accountable for their racism. And it is just pure fire. So as I say, Mars and I are speaking truth to power in this episode. And some of what we say might trigger you, especially if you are white or white passing. We are calling you in and holding you accountable. Sit with it, stay with it, lean into it. I also want to give another caveat. We do touch upon a little bit around birth trauma. So if you've had an experience of birth trauma, I just want you to be mindful and practice some self-care. But there is so much learning, so much wisdom and lightness and real talk in this episode. And I can't wait to hear what you think. Follow me on Nova Reed Official, leave your feedback there, or an email, nova@novareed.com. That's all from me for now. Over to the episode. Welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Nova Reed, and I am delighted to be bringing an absolute dame to the conversation today. Welcome Mars Lord, who is founder of Abuela Doulas, birth worker, activist, and all-round incredible human being. Welcome,
thank
Mars.
You. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for joining. Let's kick this off. So who are you, Mars? Who are you beyond the roles that you play?
Who am I? Oh, I am a woman who loves people. Loves people. Until I don't. it had to be said. I do. I genuinely love people. And do my best not to be a pessimist about them, particularly in the work that I do. Mm-hmm. But I love people. I love music. I love reading. I particularly like a good steak and a glass of red wine. So not going to be a vegan anytime soon. Could barely bear the thought of vegetarianism. But anyway, that's just me. I don't know. Someone said to me the other day, you really have the ability to form relationships quickly. And they said it as a compliment, I hope. So, yes. So that's me. I'm just someone who just loves people and who's very proud of her blackness and very passionate about the work that I do in the activism, etc.
Yeah, incredible. And we'll talk more about that as we go on. But tell me more about where you grew up and what was that like being a black child?
Oh, so I was born in the late 60s. I know.
Oh,
I
don't she's forget. Got the gene of youth.
I was born in the late 60s to my mother and my father. And in fact, I very recently found out my birth story from my mum, but because she's a Jamaican, my birth story is incredibly short. I went to the hospital, you was born. And, but unfortunately, and then I had two younger sisters, but unfortunately my father was a domestic abuser. And aww. So by the time I was five, I was living and growing up alone with my mum and my sisters. And, you know, I have nothing but respect for that woman for walking away from that relationship on her own with three children in a country that didn't like her.
Yeah.
So we grew up in, first of all, my mum, she would, we would live somewhere and then a couple of years after we moved, the area would just explode with gentrification and money. We used to live on Lots Road in Chelsea.
Ooh.
Exactly.
Ooh.
And everywhere we've lived, after Mum has moved on, within a, and I just said, you know, Mum, I think it might be you. I think you're putting your prices down. Anyway, so we grew up sort of together in a single parent household. And we went to school and Mum was our fiercest advocate. In fact, she recently told me off a couple of years ago when I shared that the careers officer when I was in school, we were talking about what I wanted to do. And I said, oh, I want to go to Oxford. I want to read literature. And she said, girls like you don't go to university, much less Oxford.
Oh, wow.
She said, girls like you become nurses. And it completely crushed me. And I never told my mum. And when I told her a couple of years ago, honestly, Jamaican mums, I know there are other mums like this in the world, but Jamaican mums, she cussed me stupid, told me that if I had told her, she'd have gone into school and she'd have told that no good woman didn't know anything at all about anything about telling her child never and don't go to university. Anyway, with hindsight, I really wish I had told my mum. Because what happened was then that I didn't actually go off to university. I was really crushed.
Yeah.
And but, you know, Mum always encouraged us and I started working and then I got married. And then when I was, whilst I had small children, I suddenly thought, you know what, I really do want my literature degree. So I'm going to get my bloody literature degree. So I signed up with the Open University.
Good.
And got my degree. And I was married and we have five children together.
Wow.
But, you know, by the time the twins were born, our relationship had completely gone south. And with he never liked the studying that I was doing, so would always try to sort of sabotage that. But I'm a different soul to the one that I was when I was at school.
Of course.
And so I just put my foot down and kept studying. And now we're divorced and I have my literature degree, which I just don't use because the work that I do doesn't need it. But I'm so proud of myself because I really wanted it.
And you did it.
And I did it. And then I got into birth work and realized that my work had barely started.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, so that was me. So that was a quick potted history. And I don't often share much of it, mostly because I'm like, yeah, it happened, you know, but I figure if I'm chatting to you, it may have some relevance somewhere.
Yeah, always relevance. And if it's okay to ask, do you think there was an element of your husband at the time not liking you bettering yourself? Not necessarily consciously.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I do. Yeah. I do think that. I do think that, you know. And when I recognised that, that was when I thought, well, that's your opinion and up to you. I mean, Yeah, I had friends at the time said, "Oh, well, he's your husband. You should listen to what he says." And it's like, yeah, he might be my husband, but it doesn't mean that I stop being a human being with thoughts and feelings and dreams
Yeah.
and ambitions. And actually, I realized that what I had needed was someone that wanted to walk alongside me rather than
Yes.
put stumbling blocks in my way. They should have, those blocks should have been stepping stones. But, you know, marriages sometimes just don't work, and we both have to take our share of the blame for it. But, you know, I'm just honing in on that one particular thing that actually spurred me to keep going, which is why you very rarely see any mention, if in fact, I don't think you see any mention of him anywhere in my work.
And it's led you to where you are today. You wouldn't
Yeah.
be who you are without it. And I firmly believe that whatever happens in our lives is testament to that.
Absolutely.
So can we talk more about birth working? You said that your journey only really, really begun in
Yeah.
education. So where, I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. For those tuning in, just a sobering study by the Embrace report that black women are 5 times more likely to die in childbirth than any other ethnicity, white women than white women. And that to me made me sit up and pay attention. So I don't know where, I mean, there is so much that goes on in this industry around racism. I don't actually know where to start, so I'll leave that
Well,
with you.
let me just take you briefly, said the woman that talks 19 a dozen and whose mother reckons they'll bury her talking. She really does. I was going to say that on my gravestone. But anyway, people, she's here, this one, the talking one. I became a doula through nosiness, so I had my newborn twins, and I went to a school coffee morning, and I hate coffee mornings. I've always hated coffee mornings. And but I took the twins, and the reason I went to the coffee morning was because I knew that someone else would hold the twins for a while, and I was a little over holding them. When you have one baby and you put them down for a minute, at least you get a minute. When you put one twin down, the second one go, "Oh, great opportunity." So, you know, and I just wanted to have a cup of tea and a cake in peace. Whilst the big kids were at school. So I was there and I discovered, I was listening to someone and she said that she was a doula and explained what a doula was. And so I got really curious and thought, well, I'd supported my sister and a friend in birth, so maybe this is something I could do. And hospitals, midwifery, none of that has ever been of interest to me. And so I went away and I did the course with the incredible Michelle Odent, who's a famous French obstetrician, and Liliana Lamas, who's an incredible doula. And I was so inspired by them that I, on my way home, as this course was ending, I'm like, I want another baby. I want to do it that way. And then I remembered I had 5 and 6 months progressive for me. So I sort of decided I would see how it worked out. I did a few births and I decided if I didn't like it after a few births, once I'd covered my training costs, I'd stop because it wasn't going to change anything. But the first birth that I attended, I remember coming out and I couldn't work out why the cars and lorries and things were still moving and trains and people were walking around and nobody had realized that this incredible thing had just happened. This event had just taken place. And I honestly felt like the world should have just stopped and bowed down in awe for a moment. And I find that I still feel that way today. So that was how I got into doulaing. But the more I sort of worked, the more I realized that a lot of the imagery, a lot of the language, a lot of the training, a lot of the people were all really rather white and middle class. Now, my first interest in doulaing, my first specialty, as it were, is when I, because I'm a twin mum, I started to learn everything I could about twins and twin birth, etc. And I became the go-to doula when people had questions about
Twins.
non-doulas having twins. And I still get people getting in touch with me now. And that was when I first started to think, actually, I can really hone my practice to be something that I want. But loving it as I was hugely conscious of the fact that I still wasn't seeing people that looked like me. I belonged to this doula organization, and if ever a black someone inquired or joined, they were immediately I was pointed to, oh, you should speak to Mars. It was like, she is our black doula. Come and join our black doula. And this really wasn't sitting well with me. Not that it was done maliciously or anything. It just wasn't sitting well with me that I wasn't seeing myself reflected. I wasn't seeing my children, my sisters, my family reflected in doula work. And honestly, all of the imagery was, you know, it was like 99% white, the imagery. So I started talking about this and I started talking up about it. And started to move towards supporting black and brown women particularly. I still support lots of Caucasian clients, white clients. I'm not, you know, saying I won't support them. But what happened was I started to learn more and more about the experiences that black women, black people had, talking to friends and to family, seeing the experiences that my white clients were having, listening to the experiences of white friends and things. So, and then I started to discover the Embrace Report and had heard that, you know, we were twice as likely as white women to die in the perinatal period. And I'm like, whoa, how are we twice as likely? What is it about us and our bodies that makes us twice as likely? But none of the reasonings for why were making any sense. And then suddenly we were three times as likely, and now we're five times as likely. And the more I spoke up, the more people it upset.
Yes.
And people would automatically say, don't be ridiculous, Mars. It's got nothing to do with colour. It's, you know, this happens to every woman. And it's really funny because I'm hearing parallel conversations right now about this pandemic that's going around. People saying to me, no, it's got nothing to do with race, because now I've started to read and to hear how black people are more likely to die.
Yes.
And every time you share that kind of information with someone, whether it's about the pandemic or whether it's in the birth world, people say it's not about race. This is a leveler. This doesn't care if you're rich or you're poor or you're blah, blah, blah. But no one who has been bringing up the fact that black people are dying more has said they're dying more because of the disease. And because it's such a current example, I think it's a really good one. But people are looking at, let's look at the care that those people are getting.
Yeah.
And whether or not they're being responded to or not getting. Just yesterday, I spoke to someone who got turned away from the hospital. They said that her she only had a mild case of it, and she spent 2.5 weeks immobilized in her bed at home.
Wow.
And is still only just recovering. And someone said that, you know, because she was worried about DBT, that maybe she should go into hospital and get it checked, and she said that she couldn't go and A, be turned away again, or B, sit there. But what's that got to do with the birth world? Well, when we talk about black women dying five times more often than white women in the perinatal period, people are getting upset. Oh my God, that's racism. That's racism. Why would you say that? What an awful thing to say.
They're getting more upset about you highlighting racism than the actual racism itself.
Yes. And so the excuses, or sorry, the reasons that were being given for why black people were dying in the perinatal period was because their lifestyle choices. They're more likely to have hypertension and obesity. What does obesity mean? Let's think about it. If we look across the world, if we look through Eurocentric eyes, then the only people who are not obese are that sort of perfect size 8. But there are different shapes right across the globes, right across the continents, etc. But anyway, I digress. So hypertension, obesity, not attending classes, being poor. Now, if you're black, you are more likely to be at the lower rungs of society.
Yes.
That is fact. But why is that? Well, it's class, Miles. It's about class. It's got nothing to do with colour. It's about class. And I say, well, if that's what it is, why is it when we talk about racism and systemic and structural racism that you bring, but what about white working class people, as though black people are somehow not working class.
They're
above that, despite being the lowest rung of the social strata. Sometimes I think to myself, Mars, your brain is going to explode because their logic makes no sense. So we've been blamed for having black bodies, and as a fantastic doctor, and honestly, if you're going to talk to anyone, you really must talk to Dr. Christina Ketchy.
Oh, yes.
And as Dr. Christine says, surely a few extra levels of melanin in your skin isn't what causes you to die in childbirth. It doesn't make your body inferior. So that then is eugenic, surely. If that's how we're thinking, that a few levels of melanin in our skin is causing us to do badly, then that's eugenics, because clearly white skin is superior, and that's why they survive and why they thrive. And one of the things we're not talking about is the morbidity rates, the near misses, etc. But so people will get upset when I say, well, it's not because of the melanin in our skin. It's not because we're too poor. It's not because we're uneducated. Because rich, black, highly educated women.
And celebrities.
Oh, I never do the whole celebrity thing. I mean, you can be a celebrity for anything. Well, but, you know, but so these. But
Selena Williams, for example.
Yes. Yeah. But so I use her as my example because I think it's not about celebrity. My example with Serena is she's a wealthy black woman who speaks different languages, who is a well-honed athlete.
World class, yeah.
So the reason that she almost died a day after her daughter was born is not because she's educated, is not because she has money, is not because she's unfit. She wasn't listened to. Despite knowing her own body, despite knowing her own medical history, she wasn't listened to. And why wasn't she listened to? Well, there's only one real reason for that. Because she's black. Because she birthed in a system where the more you pay, the more you get. So actually, if you've got a multi-millionaire billionaire, you know, with a billionaire husband asking for tests, sure, order the tests and make more money for the hospital. So what if she, do you know what I mean? So there's a reason for this. But she was at much as risk as any of my children or any black woman in the Western world. Yes. And it's a Western world thing. Because if you've read Americana, my favourite line is that I didn't realise I was black until I arrived in America. In the African continent, you're not black.
Of course.
You're just African.
You just are. Yeah.
You just are. But you come into the Western world and people say, well, you know, Mars, you go on about race, etc. But race is a social construct. Of course it is. I don't disagree with you. But it's the way that you have set up your systems and your structures, using that social construct to keep me down. So when black slaves are working alongside the indentured Irish, and they were getting on and they were in communion and community together, oh shit, we can't have everybody at the bottom of the rung getting on because they might overthrow us. Oh, at least you're not black. Now let me bring you above. And that's not even talking about what the difference is between enslavement and being indentured is. But that's a really simple way that the social structure of race was designed to divide people.
Yeah.
So now we look across society and white women, you'll get this. You know what sexism is.
Yes.
You know what misogyny is. So why don't you understand what racism is, and why don't you understand what misogynoir is? Because if people don't like you for your skin tone, and they don't like you for your gender or your sex, then you really are at the bottom of the rung. So the more I spoke up about it, the more people got upset. other people started listening and saying, what can we do? What can we do to change this?
Yes.
And I ended up walking away from the doula organization I was a member of because they refused to make it safe for me and for other Black people to be in. I remember writing an article for their magazine and they said, no, this is too political. This deals with housekeeping. This has got to go out to our subscribers. We can't have people reading this stuff about us. And all I was talking about was systemic and structural racism.
Wow.
And how as an organization, it was important that we did the work and made ourselves safe, etc. And so it was tossed. And then the big diversity issue that they had sort of built suddenly became a picture of a naked Black woman standing, rising from water, pregnant naked Black woman rising from water in the front cover with absolutely nothing inside the magazine to do with that. And people saying things like, oh my God, this is incredible. Maybe next time you'll get Beyonce. And it's like, so actually you missed a huge opportunity there. But, you know, I wish them well. And I'm sure that at some point they will actually do the work. To make the change, but I couldn't stay within that. And when I train doulas, because I now train doulas, people say to me, oh, are you accredited by this organization? And I say, no, I can't be accredited by an organization if I am working particularly with Black and brown people and I'm educating them and training them to become doulas. I cannot then feed them into a system that's unsafe.
Yes.
And that would be detrimental to their health and well-being and their mental health, etc.
Yes.
So no, Abuela Doulas isn't part of that. And the reason I started training Black women, so I jump backwards and forwards in my timeline, I realize, but is because people would just call me or email me and tell me their stories. Or I'd get a call saying, you know, is it okay if I ask for a Black doula? Because we're so concerned with upsetting fragile whiteness that we continue to damp down that which is us, that which our soul cries out for.
Yeah.
Because if we allow our souls to cry out, then someone else has got to sit and cry and say, oh my God, that's so awful. I feel so bad. And then everyone's like, oh my God, let me comfort you because you're crying and you feel so awful and you feel so bad. And meanwhile, Black women are dying. And I mean, whenever I speak in my birth work, etc., I make it very clear at the beginning, I'm just not into that.
I remember one of the first conversations we had, I think, I can't remember where you were, but you were doing a talk somewhere and you were talking about all of this and a white woman in the audience started crying. And I remember you sharing with me what happened in that moment and how you just handled that.
Yeah,
beautifully and powerfully.
I just told her to breathe and I took a minute to breathe with her and then I said, now look around, because whilst you're crying, this whole room is concentrating on you and everyone's forgotten what I'm talking about. I'm asking you to sit in your discomfort for an hour. I think I was 50 whatever. I said, I've lived in my discomfort for 50 plus years.
Yeah,
so you can sit in yours for an hour.
Yeah,
whilst you talk.
This is the work. This is the work.
Yes, and people get upset by it. Because when you talk about structural and systemic racism, people hear three...
KKK.
They hear four words. You are a racist. Yes. That's all they hear. They don't hear systemic and structural racism. They don't hear that Black women are dying five times more often than they are. They don't hear that Black people don't feel sad. I mean, my God, one of the saddest things I read just recently, which again takes us back into this pandemic, is Black men saying, it's all right for you all to wear scarves and cover your faces if you're white and you're walking down the street, but I'm a Black man. And if I put a scarf on my face...
Suspicion.
I'm going to be stopped
by the police.
I'm going to be, you know, finding my way towards a prison cell.
Yeah.
So to save my life, I cannot do the things that you do to save your life. I cannot cover my face to save me from the virus. but having my face uncovered exposes me to the virus. Yes,
absolutely.
However my face is, you're coming for me. But, you know, so when it comes to the birth work, I just cannot cope any longer with the not black women, all women, not black people, all people. It's like, take your all lives matter. I'll put it somewhere it ain't supposed to be.
Because meanwhile, to me, what is so sobering about this is that you have been in the industry where you saw that it was black women were 2 times more likely and then 3 times more likely, and now we're 5 times more likely. Yeah. So it's getting worse. And I'm hearing accounts from people in my anti-racism work who are on labour wards, and they're now waking up, they're white women waking up, and they're seeing the differences between how they are treated on the labour ward, how they were spoken to, the fact that they're given their pain medication first, the fact that they're being discharged with an aftercare support, and a black peer is just given a telephone number on a card.
Yeah.
And they're seeing it unfold in front of them. This is what we're talking about. This is what affects outcomes.
Yes. And also, the black midwives and the black doctors, the black midwives who are far more likely to be suspended from duty. The black midwife that is being told by a doctor outside of a black woman's room, you go in there and you make her do this, otherwise.
Wow.
You know, and when it comes down to it, white midwives are more likely to be struck off, but black midwives are more likely to be suspended. So they walk a very fine line. So how do they support people? How do they listen to black women's choices? If listening to black women's choices gets them suspended, gets them looked at suspiciously. Because you see, the tropes, the things that you talk about in your work, the aggressive black woman, the angry black woman, the disruptive black woman, the non-complying black woman, all of these tropes and stereotypes are applied to the black midwife when she doesn't walk the line. So there is a huge level of privilege that a white birthing woman and a white midwife have when they say, you have options, you have choice. When I became a doula, one of the things that I learned really clearly in the training was, you do not advocate for people. They have a voice. You give them the tools, show them the information so that they can speak for themselves. The more I go into my birth activism, the more I work with black and brown people, marginalized and vulnerable people, the more I realize that actually I do not have the luxury of not advocating for these people because we are dying at 5 times the rate of the others. So not only am I talking to them about how to advocate for themselves, but I'm advocating for them. A very simple example. I had this incredible couple that, you know, they moved from the States. They're a mixed couple. They moved from the States because they just couldn't bear the racism. They couldn't bear the way that they were treated so differently. And they came to this lovely island of ours, which, you know, and he was born here. So they came to this lovely island of ours, which, as we know, has absolutely no racism. It's the top society in the world and completely and totally loves us and never, ever, ever, ever discriminates against us, because obviously that's just someone having a bad day and us having a bad attitude. So they gave birth in the private system. Oh, that's all right. Their mother gave birth in the private system. They get everything they want. They get all the attention they want. So it was a beautiful birth. It was late at night. In fact, I was sat in a box at the Royal Albert Hall, and I was about to watch Legacy, and I was good. I was good. And as my arse hit the seat, my phone rang, and I went outside, and they're like, I'm in labor, come now.
Oh, boy.
Of course I'll come, darling. Don't worry about my absolutely longed for concert. But okay, so I go. The birth is beautiful. I say to the midwife, as they're settled back in their room, I said, you know, I know it's really late, but is there any food? Really strange private hospital, because every other private hospital I've worked in, there's like food on tap, you know, just call down to the kitchen, pick up. Anyway, this midwife said, no, because the kitchen and that's closed. She said, but give me a minute. And then she went off and 15 minutes later came back with this absolute smorgasbord. She just had these gorgeous sandwiches and fruits and all sorts, so loads for my client to eat. So when I left them, everyone's happy, everyone's calm, everyone's loved, everyone's looked after. Mm-hmm. I leave my phone on for my clients after they've given birth for the first couple of nights. Then I switch off because I'm off call and don't need my phone on at night. And I get a phone call. Can you read your email, please? Mm-hmm. It's really important. So I'm like, okay.
From who?
From the dad.
Okay.
So I open my email. And he said, I'm really sorry to direct you to my email, but we can't speak this out loud. But the midwife that booked us in when we first started was racist then and is racist now.
Oh.
And we are really scared and frightened. And my wife is tensing up. She's being examined roughly, spoken down to, etc. Can you come? Now, I'd only been home 4 hours. But that was okay, because you know what, this is my work, this is what I do. So I spent 12 and a half hours sitting in a room protecting this couple.
Wow.
From racism. Everybody that came into that room almost refused to look at this woman, as though something was being said outside the doors.
Wow.
But me being me, me loving people. Oh, my goodness, look at your earrings. Oh, those are gorgeous. Oh, says the healthcare assistant that's come in, that's looking after them. And by the time she's come in and listened to their, done the blood pressure again, she softened a little. Mm. And then the midwife who was in charge of their care came in partway through the day. And because she'd started to stay outside of the room now, because there's a witness in the room, and just said, oh, everyone seems to come out of here smiling. Why is that?
Oh,
it's like, ooh, the baby's just been born. Why wouldn't everybody be smiling? So, you know, so sometimes my work is sitting and bearing witness.
Wow.
And advocating and speaking up. So this midwife said to me, who are you? Oh, I'm Mars. I'm Mars Lord. I'm their doula. Who are you? And she gave me her name. And I said, wonderful. She said, well, how long have you been doing this? I said, oh, I've been doing this for over 15 years. And you, how long have you been a midwife? Every question she asked me, I asked back to her. I said, look, if you're worried about who I am, just Google my name. Because I knew if she Googled my name, she would see that I don't stand for this shit and I call it out.
Yes.
And by the end of the day, she said to me, as she went off shift, I hope I didn't get in your way. I was just trying to do my... I said, of course you weren't getting in my way. I said, you're a midwife. You had your job to do. And I think that was her saying, okay, busted, caught. And people say, well, that's just one of those one-off examples. I wish I wish it was, because my inbox, my voicemail, my face-to-face conversations with black and brown women. The day I met Dr. Christine Akeche, who, you know, if I'm going to fangirl over anyone, I'm fangirling over Dr. Christine Akeche. And it makes her laugh because she's like, really, Mars, stop it. Just stop it. I had an Asian couple, and they arrived at hospital before I did, and they sent me a message saying, please come quick, because we don't like the way the midwife's treating us. I walk into the room and I think, oh, there's a lovely midwife, because now I'm in the room, this midwife is absolutely lovely. And she went out to get something, and they both looked at me and said, don't know what you did, but that woman is not the same woman that was here before you came. She's completely changed her attitude and the way she is. Then we go through the labor. It's long and it's slow, but it's good. And a doctor comes in, a white doctor, and says, this is what I'm going to do. This is when I'm going to do it. So you need to be ready for me to come back in 20 minutes and do these things. And I said, well, they have a, this is what I'm going to do. This is when I'm going to do it. You've got 20 minutes left. But so now my couple, who've been doing really, really well, are suddenly feeling, you know, attacked. But, right, don't worry. I'm still here. I've still got you. You've still got you. We'll keep doing what we're doing. And even the midwife now is starting to think, oh, actually, that's a bit off, and is kind of working towards its couples, but saying to them, you really need to listen to what the doctor says. And there wasn't an emergency at this point, it was just slow. then Dr. Akechi comes in. Hi. Oh, you look like you're doing really well. I'm just going to have a little look at your notes and have a little look and see what's going on with this baby's heart rate. How are you feeling? Oh, you look like you're doing such an amazing job. Okay, so I've reviewed your notes and everything. And now I've asked you a couple of questions. And as far as I can see, you're doing really well. I reckon you'll have that baby out before I get back. But I am going to pop back in a short wee while, see what's going on and see what you want to do. 5 minutes, she left. The room changes. The grumpy midwife who's leaning towards the first doctor is now flummoxed because she doesn't quite know what to do because a different doctor has come in with some different words. My couple, their chest is push out.
Of course.
And they're feeling good. In fact, they did tell me, and this makes me laugh to this day, they really like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And they said to me in the midwife, after this, so this baby is born, Dr. Christine comes in and goes, oh, I knew you could do it without me. Smiles at them, congratulates them and leaves. And this couple turned to me and said, you know, we were able to do that because of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And me and the midwife look at each other and go, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it turns out on further conversation that they really like his motivational talks.
Okay.
And one of his motivational talks really resonated with her through the labour. So after Dr. Christina Ketche had come in, they were like, yeah, do you know what? Throw my Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the backpack and let's get it done. And they get it done. And this happens all the time. And so now I'm finding that more and more birth workers, birth keepers are beginning to accept that systemic and structural racism exists, as well as conscious and unconscious racism. And I think we do them a we do them a kindness when we call it bias.
I don't call it bias
because we know what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about racism. It's time to tell the truth. Just bring this stuff onto the table. The Embrace report frustrated me because for a while, the professor that ran it, I remember doing a being on Radio 4, which apparently is a pinnacle of success. I remember doing Women's Hour at Radio 4. No disrespect to anyone that loves Women's Hour, BBC Radio 4. I just don't listen to it. So it didn't, I didn't realise just how big a deal it was. But so I did this with some incredible people talking. And then the next day there was, or within the next couple of days, there was a BBC Radio 4 podcast with the professor of the Embrace Report who stated, and I was listening and it was all I could do not to fling my computer through the window, said that race has nothing to do with it. And yet if you go through her work and her research, she says that the people who are least likely to be satisfied with their antenatal birth and postnatal care are black and brown women. So in the podcast she says race is not an issue, in the research she says race is an issue. I'm tired of people wanting to research it.
Well, we need action. It's again, why are we not listened to? Why are we not believed?
Well, we can't be believed. It's not racist until the nice white lady says it. So going back to the doula organisation I was in, and the conversations about race were coming up and coming up publicly, and this was before I'd left them, one of the women said to me, why did I never know that this was an issue? And I said, I sat across from you in leadership meetings, because I was on the leadership team. I sat across from you in leadership meetings for 7 years, and I told you it was an issue. And her response, I'm leaving this conversation now.
And
that's what happens.
Ejecting, denying, just not being able to withstand it. And that's why I always say a huge component of being actively anti-racist is simply listening.
Yes.
It's so simple. It is so simple, but we are so often not heard.
I know. And the thing, and the what I had recently was someone who has now left a breastfeeding organisation, who one of the breastfeeding counsellors in a session said something about breastfeeding burkas. and then said something else that was, you know, racially inappropriate. And in the room was one black woman and one Muslim woman.
Mm.
And the black woman said to me, you know, if she, and it said to the organization, if she feels so free to speak like that in a room with one black and one Asian, or one Muslim, sorry, woman, then how does she speak when the room is white?
Mm.
And how does she treat the people that she, you know, the people that are coming to her for support?
Yeah.
So what did the organization do? Well, within the organization, within that group, they decided that they would do some bias training. And the black woman was supposed to sort of be heavily involved with it, but then it turns out that actually it was going to be run with by a white woman who was within the same group, who had not stopped the racism that had gone on, had not dealt with it. But this woman was going to lead the bias training, but with a nice black face beside her. So this black woman has left the organization, and I was with her when she spoke to them and just said, you need to look at what you're doing.
Yeah.
This is, you know, if this has happened and a member has told you this has happened, what actions are you going to take to prevent this from happening again, to educating your supervisors, your peer counselors, your everybody? And they said, well, you know, we've been looking at our website. And I said, I'm going to stop you because putting pretty black faces on a website,
that's not
anti-racism create.
That's tokenism.
Pure tokenism. And I said, so I said, please don't go down that road because I'm going to stop you here before you get upset at how angry I feel about that. I said, of course you should have black imagery and brown imagery and inclusive imagery on your website. That should be as standard.
That's the least, yeah.
That's not you dealing with racism, etc. And you know, I just see it all the time. So the more I work, the more I see this. And I don't even go looking for it. My phone rings, my emails.
Yes, of course.
Doulas that I mentor, black, brown and indifferent, all ethnicities come to me and talk to me about things that they've seen or that they're part of, or wanting to change the way they're practicing and what they're doing. And the biggest red herring I found within the white birth workers were like, yeah, but it was a black midwife that did that. So I talked to them, well, this is how the system is set up. So
of course,
midwife steps outside of a very narrow remit, then they're suspended. So the work continues, and yet I still love people until I don't. But I'm really completely and truly over the big white names in the birth world that won't stand. And they say, well, we are standing, we feel it's important to be kind.
So you mean the silent complicity?
Yes.
Placing kindness being a form of spiritual bypassing, basically.
Yes.
That
yes.
We can't be truthful. We can't speak about the devastating impact of these stats because that feels like that's being unkind.
Yes.
And so we don't address it. And then it just takes on new formats.
And I say, so it's kind to leave someone suffering from the effects of racism.
Yeah.
It's kind to let someone speak racist rhetoric. It's kind to appear on another panel or in another conference where everybody is white. It's kind to speak up at events that are designed to talk about black maternal mortality and throw in the all lives matter, what about white women? This is kind. I said, tell me, what is kind about leaving people in chains?
Wow.
If kindness is what brought us to where we are, then you and I, Nova, would still be in chains somewhere on this globe.
And I'm sure there's people that would want that.
Absolutely. And so, but what about the chains that we can't see, the microaggressions, the constant talking down to, the constant jumping in with the what about white people, the constant, why do you make this about race? Oh, it's a leveler. It's not a leveler. It's not a leveler. The act of giving birth, the pandemic,
yes,
they are things that happen to people. How we treat people at the time of pandemic,
yes,
at the time of birth, that is the issue.
100%. 100%. And to me, it comes down with desire. You either want to be part of the solution and to stop causing trauma, or you don't.
Yeah.
Black and white, simple as that.
I have a very simple phrase that I use whenever I talk, and one day someone's going to just boot me out of the room. I'm like, listen, black women are dying. Stand up and be anti-racist or get the fuck out of the way.
This is why I love Mars. She speaks truth to power. But it's, do you know what? I'm going to share something personal. In December, I had, you will know what this is, Mars. I had an open myomectomy. So it's a surgery to remove, I had tumors wreaking havoc in my womb. And so I'm on this gynecology ward, and I'm probably 2 days post-surgery, and I had a full-blown panic attack. Mm. What caused that panic attack was me feeling fearful that I'm not going to be believed when I tell the medical professionals that I'm in pain, and hearing all these stories that I've heard through your work, through people coming to me about the outcomes, and I had a full-blown panic attack in hospital. So this stuff affects our lives. Luckily, I was in hospital with a team that were incredible, but I had to do things before that to safeguard myself, to advocate for myself, to avoid anything, avoid as much as possible. And I also speak a certain way, so I have privilege because I speak the Queen's English.
And you're articulate for a black woman.
And I'm articulate, and you know, I used to work in counselling, so I contacted some of my old psychotherapists, and I asked them to ask for things for me to help with certain outcomes, right? First on the list for surgery, blah, 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 blah. But I still had a full-blown panic attack, and that was coming from the fact that I was frightened, that I wouldn't be looked after like everybody else.
Yeah, so, and it's a very real fear. Yeah. And so someone said, well, you know, oh. So I remember there was one particular Instagram account, and they think they're absolutely lovely, and you know, for the most part they are, but they would always use a quote that said, we mustn't profit off of other women's fear, or something like that, within birth, or by scaring people. And the image that they used with every post was a black woman, and these posts didn't start appearing until after the very public outing of the Embrace report. Mm. So I was looking and I thought, so are you saying, shh, don't talk about those things? It's not right that your work is about that stuff. Keep it quiet and let's go back to birthing.
Yeah, let's be comfortable.
Which is a luxury that you have if you're going to be treated well. And what surprises a lot of white women is discovering now that if you have a black partner, your outcomes are also worse than if you are within a white couple.
Yes.
And that is when people start to take notice. Mm. I've always said, when it's in your backyard, that's when it bothers you. Yeah. None of us were bothered about the plastic and the landfills and the dumping when it was all done in developing countries away from our site. But as soon as that plastic hit our seas, suddenly we're all outraged about plastic. We're all outraged about plastic. We're not worried about the outcomes of black birthing women and people until we realize that having a black partner means that we are now at risk. So now it's in my backyard. Now I'm shouting out loud. And don't give me that pathetic excuse for your racism, your get out of jail card. I have a black family member. I should behave myself.
I talk about this with people on my anti-racism course who have come to the work because they are raising biracial or mixed race children. And I said, would you have come to this work if you were not partnered with somebody who was black or brown? And they said, you know, the painful reality is, no, I wouldn't have. And I think, you know, part of doing that work is being really honest with ourselves and recognizing that, yeah, a lot of the time that racism has been able to be prolonged for as long as it has is because it doesn't affect you. So that it doesn't affect white people, doesn't affect the majority.
Yeah.
So nothing changes. So part of being anti-racist is regardless of whether it personally and directly impacts you, it does impact you in terms of outcomes. If you're living in a society where everybody is safe and treated in a way where they're able to thrive, then that has a knock-on effect. But if you don't see it, then...
Absolutely. And so if black women are the lowest of the low, at the bottom of the totem pole, if we look after black women, society can only benefit.
Of course.
Because if they're at the bottom and we treat them with kindness and dignity and grace and as though they are valuable humans, how much more will we do it to the others going up the line? My gorgeous friend Nicholas said to me, we were in the kitchen one day and I was teaching him how to make bread and we were just chatting. In fact, no, it wasn't the day of making bread because Donna was there, and we were in his kitchen chatting, and we were talking a bit about my work and all the isms in the world, and he said, do you know, if we looked around the room and found the most vulnerable, the most at risk, the most in need, and we all collectively raised them up, then we looked around the room again and did the same, and looked around the room again and did the same, he said we would lift society up.
Yeah.
So if you lift up that black woman, because she is the most vulnerable, and don't talk to me about disability, don't talk to me about queerness, etc. Add a layer of black.
On top.
Add a layer of black. I'm tired of doing this work and being told, no, but what about these people? Of course, what about these people? But this is where I'm working.
Absolutely.
And if these people have a layer of black, do they still have to wait at the back of the queue for their issues to be dealt with? Because the first thing that we'll see in someone is the level of melanin they have. Mm. And then our inbuilt responses kick in.
Affects how we treat them. Yeah.
Yep. You know, so yes, let's stand for the others in the room that are vulnerable as well. But I barely have the bandwidth to do the work that I'm doing here. And there are incredible people around me who are working with the other isms, for want of a better phrase. And I will continue to do my best to be an ally, a good ally. And yes, I'll get things wrong. But you see, if we're talking about changing the systems and the structures of racism and the unconscious and conscious racism within people, mistakes will be made.
Of course.
But mistakes are simply signs of growth.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And you can't do this work without it. It's about dropping ego and actually, right, what is more important? Reducing trauma and helping change outcomes or staying comfortable.
Yeah. And we don't have the luxury of staying comfortable if we're black because we're dying. And that's fact.
That is fact. So I want to ask you a question. For me, finding joy in the middle of all this shit is vital for my not going mad. So how do you find joy when you're doing this work?
So I'm training these incredible doulas. And I mean, the work they are doing. So there's, I love to tell people examples, give them stories of the work that I'm doing. So I run this course, and I have this room full of incredible black people. And one, I think, or maybe two, no, two or three white women as well, who have done the pre-work and know to sit and allow the conversations to go. Anyway, so I run this course with this incredible group of people. And then 6 months later, I'm looking, and two of the black women who met on the course have started to run a workshop for about breastfeeding and vulnerabilities in breastfeeding. And their workshop is about breastfeeding with HIV.
Wow.
And they both had a passion for this. And in the course, they've learned that the other one has this passion. And so they've crafted this thing and it is going so well. People are coming from all over to attend it.
Wow.
It happened because of the training that I'm doing. It happened because they want to speak up for marginalized community. And the people that are coming to me to train with me are coming because they want to work fully within their communities. And they want to make sure that the vulnerable and the marginalized are loved and held and cared for. So what gives me joy is looking at the work that people are going on to do, watching the ones who are changing the things that they do. If I'm going to shout out one woman, because I really think she deserves shouting out, Rebecca Schiller. She's an author and was a founder of birthrights.org.uk. She heard or recognized and saw after a conversation that the awards ceremony that she was going to, everyone was white. Everyone was white. And so she publicly said that she would not go because there was no inclusion. Cue the usual defensiveness, the, oh, you know, someone generations ago in my family was black, therefore I can't be racist. This person on our committee is brown, therefore we can't be racist. And she said, that's not what I've said. I'm not going. And she was accused of not being kind. And the white birth world turned on her. They turned on her. The vitriol that went her way. And the reason I shout out Rebecca Schiller is because she kept her head up.
Yeah.
She held true to her convictions. She held true to her principles and her morals. And she walked away. And I have no doubt that this stuff didn't impact her work. I'm convinced it impacted her work and her reach. But that was what she did. That is what a good ally does.
It is.
But most of them will just smile and say, well, I am standing up. You just can't see it. I'm doing it very quietly from over here. And I'm like, that's fine, but stop running into my timeline, into my conversation spaces, into rooms where we're talking about this thing and shouting about All Lives Matter and showing me your credentials and centering yourself and telling me why you refuse, or sorry, why you can't afford to pay black women for their work and their emotional labor, but expect others to pay you. I have, there are many issues going on in the birth world and I will just keep going. But what brings me joy, which is what the actual question was, because I do digress, is watching people like Rebecca Schiller, a doula, another doula that I knew, a white doula, who argued with me when I was talking about race and racism within our doula organization, coming back 18 months later saying, I have begun the work. I'm holding my hands up and I want to say sorry.
Oh, yes.
What brings me joy is watching black and brown women having the kinds of births they deserve to have, watching the black and brown doulas who recognize it's more than just birth, but recognize the minefields and the mazes that black and brown people have to go through. It's watching the black and brown doctors and midwives and nurses raising their voices. It's being on the pinnacle of whiteness, radio, Women's Hour Radio 4. It's about, you know, my joy is seeing the results of the work. But yeah, bloody hell, I need a good glass of wine sometimes. And once I've finished doing, you know, something, I just need to go and be with black people. If I've just done this big workshop and we're talking about this stuff, I actually don't want to be around white people. Yeah. And it's not because I don't like white people.
You need to be energizing.
But I just need to, I just need to be somewhere where my code doesn't need to switch.
Yeah, just be on. Just be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So that's what brings me joy, seeing the work, the results of the work. You know, yeah, the downside of that is you see the ones that have got all the chat but none of the action.
But you're seeing, you know, the action.
Those that are doing it, walking the walk and talking the talk, they're leaving those ones in the dust, so that those ones in the dust have got a choice to make. Get up and join or get the fuck out of the way.
I think that is a brilliant way to end. Mars, I've absolutely loved talking with you. Thank you for speaking truth to power and just bringing your whole self. Can you let people know where they can find you online or anything else you've got coming up?
Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, I'm at Abuela Doulas, A-B-U-E-L-A. D-O-U-L-A, Abuela Doula. If you Google Mars Lord, all of my information comes up somewhere. So I work under both names. Abuela Doulas is my training activist name. Mars Lord is my sort of doula work. I am just about to launch some online antenatal courses.
Lovely.
And I've been spending time taking my face-to-face workshops, so training people to become doulas, and putting them into an online course whilst we're all in lockdown. Someone asked me the other day, this is a terrible time to want to be a doula, isn't it? I said, this is the perfect time. Want to be a doula, because...
Baby boom.
Yeah, but not just the baby boom, but we have got to protect people in pregnancy, birth and labour. Labour and birth, and black and brown people particularly. So this is the perfect time to train to become an Abuela doula who works in cultural safety.
Yeah, absolutely love the work that you're doing. Thank you for everything. And it's an absolute pleasure meeting you. And thank you for joining me today.
You're absolutely welcome. Loved it.
Thank you.
What did I tell you? An absolutely powerful, heartbreaking, hard, and very necessary conversation. And I imagine that would have been really difficult for many of you to hear for a number of reasons, depending on who you are. But my invitation to you, especially if you are white or white passing and you're in a position of influence, is to go back, listen to it, and listen to it again, because I want as many people to hear this episode and to start raising awareness, recognizing the very real life impact of systemic and structural conscious and unconscious racism that is impacting people right now and unfolding before our very eyes. And that maternal mortality rate in black women is just, for me as a black woman, is just so painful. And more people need to know about it, raise awareness so that we can start taking action and, you know, having an effect on our social circles and also at work, because I know many of you who listen to this work in the NHS. So that is my invitation to you, and I don't think I or Mars can impart any more urgently the importance of actively being anti-racist, and that it is necessary and urgent, and we can all start today. And I hope it's okay. I just want to close the episode by honouring some things that have been going on in the UK this week. At the time of re-recording this soundbite, this outro, it's the 17th of April. And when Mars and I actually recorded this episode, and when I recorded my introduction, it was about 3 weeks ago. In that time, a lot of what we've been talking about are devastatingly coming to pass. And this week, we found out the lives of two black pregnant women were taken this week. They were impacted by CV19, and it is utterly devastating. And it is a sign of how everything we are talking about is impacting people's lives every single day. And I just want to honour their memory, Selena and Mary, with a short dedication.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Love.